assistance, and they didn't get stuff until Tuesday. So the water and the ready-to-eat meals didn't come in for like 4 days, which was crazy because they requested it in advance. And then there's also PSCA Legal, which is kind of our legal aid service that also has been advising people on how to get aid, not just FEMA, but also SBA loans. We've got the National Guard in town assisting with the rescues. We've got the 101st Airborne Division arrived yesterday. So the government on all levels, city, state, and local, and federal, has been great. And I feel like, as a person who loves to criticize the government, this is not what we want to criticize them for. If we want to criticize them for inaction on climate change, which has made this thing as serious as it is, that's fair game. But as far as their response, everybody has been working around the clock. And it's just extremely demoralizing for us here to have people that aren't even here saying these things and criticizing, people's best efforts.
I wish you the best of luck to you and to your community and your neighbors. And I hope you stay safe. Thank you so much, Lauren.
All right, bye-bye.
My guest has been Lauren Steiner, an organizer, activist, and independent journalist based in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm Sonali.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
You can follow KBOO on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBOO on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Running On Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Lanita Duke from Grassroot News. Now, Running On Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Now, in this episode of Running On Air, we're talking to two candidates running for mayor, and we want you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Now, you can call the air room with questions for our candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, or you can email us a question at runningonair@kboo.org. Now, let's meet our candidates for the day. We're very excited and humbled to have two candidates, Sharon Nassat and Beauty Al-Salam. Did I pronounce your names correctly?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I am so honored that you're here. And we were talking earlier about how wonderful it is that we have so many candidates of various experiences running. And full disclosure, I've given the candidates a copy of the questions that I'll ask them. This is not gotcha journalism. We're KBOO Community Radio. And with that being said, let me ask Sharon the first question, and then Beauty will follow up, answering the same question. The first question is to Sharon. So Sharon, what inspired you to run for mayor in Portland?
Well, thank you, Lenita. I appreciate it, and your listeners. And I am have lived here basically my whole life, since I was in grade school. And I really feel that my knowledge, having been a real estate broker, and going to council many times to tell them what you're doing with this housing is going to drive up the prices, and how you've gotten into the market and changed it. And then later I said it's going to cause us to have problems with us losing businesses by putting residential properties without parking.
Now, who did you say this to?
Oh, excuse me, to City Council.
Okay.
Okay.
So you've testified before City Council about how discriminatory their policies are to homeowners.
No. That the policies they were setting forward were not sound as far as real estate. I was a real estate broker. But to go forward, why I'm very interested in the town. So seeing that, I can understand the housing issue. My mother ran a boarding house when I was a child. My father died when I was 3. There's 11 of us, but 7 were still at home. And everybody had a boarding house, and I understand rooming houses and boarding houses and how it's such cheaper. But also other things having to do with the city, how hosty it is, the fact that every part of town is different yet inviting. It doesn't say, we're our type, don't come here. It says, hey, guess what, we got to show you. And Portland is a large port, and none of the candidates that were standing up or people that are running for office are talking about we're one of the 13th ports in the nation. You can go anywhere in Canada and Mexico on roads and rail here, anywhere in the world on water and air, and our mayor should be talking about those type of things. And all kinds of other things that have to do with a large major city that weren't in the conversation of the people that are running. And I really believe I'm out of box thinker. I'm very inclusive. I have been on the front page of the newspaper for being a serial testifier, so I'm really into environmental justice. And I know that coming into the room with ideas and then sitting down and asking others, what do you think, and listening, coming up with consensus, getting the stakeholders to go forward, there's a lot we can do here, and it takes the right ton of attitude that is putting that forward, kind of the Bud Clark type of inclusiveness.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. Beauty?
Full disclosure, I did not set out to run for mayor. Initially, I was going to run for city commissioner, but I was moving, so I recognized that because I was moving from the Mount Tabor area to downtown, then I would no longer be qualified to run for city commissioner. And as I got more into the sticks of what the new the layout would be for the new form of government, I was really inspired to step into the space of candidacy for mayor twofold. One, because I'm not still looking to run, very committed to walking a steady pace as I have from the day that I filed for candidacy. And that to say, from the gate, I've made a very intentional decision to not take in any donations, because for me, I'm looking at asking the city to become a public servant, to lift the city and to breathe life into the city. So I don't really understand the mindset of then going back and basically in the way that I view it is panhandling from the constituents to promote myself.
Like, well, I don't really answer my question. What inspired you to run for mayor?
Lots of layers. I could be an orator, but I won't be. Not a politician, a peopletician, maybe a poetician. So I actually wrote a piece that better articulates my heart in less words. No more running. This is not a race. Racism, misogyny, and elitism are all a disgrace. When we purposefully impede anyone's ability to equally participate, we all lose. at this human race. In this age of information, we could and should know the seeds as well as the roots from which we have allowed all of this disease to grow, drawing life out of humanity through the illusion of black inferiority and white supremacy, patriarchy, and even the formation of factions. Ignorance is now a choice, as we choose to use media, technology, and entertainment as desensitizing and dehumanizing distractions. We walk this road together, so may we take an honest look at who we have become. I pray that we ask ourselves with all sincerity, are we the embodiment of who we hope future generations will grow to be? Self-absorbed separatists, fully focused on me and mine, with little to no concern for we. We have begun to normalize narcissism as a local, national, and even a global society. We can do better, starting with being honest about what we are currently doing and what we have not done.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Thank you so much. You answered my question with a poetry slam, nothing but respect. Let's move on to the second question, which is, I'm going to start with Sharon. Again, you're listening to Running on Air. We have two candidates here, Sharon Assat and Beauty Al-Salam. Sharon, how do you think your background and work experience will translate at City Hall?
Well, I've been in hospitality for a lot of years. That's actually, I took commercial foods in college and came out a sous chef and then spent enough time so as a chef and worked in the industry. So you really learn how to deal with people, several things at a time, silo things that need to be siloed, and decide what needs to be dealt with right at that time. I also did specialty events, which meant I was out in the public, like the Rose Festival, Bite of Portland, all of the different events, setting up and being with, you know, usually 15 or 20 employees there and saying, gee, if 1,000 people come, how many cups of coffee will they have? And kind of noticing what the crowds will do and the people will do and how to deal in that type of situation. And then being a real estate broker, I learned all about first-time home buying, the mortgage scandals, the problems, the fact of what raises the cost and what lowers the cost of housing, and the problems that are associated with not having the jobs in the community that you need, and services like people that pack their kids up in the morning and walk them up to a bus, put them on a bus to take them to daycare instead of having that daycare in their neighborhood. And all the things that you notice when you're a realtor, as people ask you, you know, where's the daycares? Where's the school? Where's this? Where's that? You know, how do you get along here? What's the attitude? I'm going to say what I tell people in Portland is Portland attitude is you don't beat your companion. You don't beat your kids. You don't beat your animals. You don't like what your neighbor's doing. Don't do it. If you really don't like it, don't watch.
Okay. And Beauty, would you answer the question? How do you think your background and work experience translates into you being mayor and at City Hall?
One, being a third generation, born and raised in Portland, been here my entire life. As far as work experience, I could say as far as employment, but I feel like the best work that I've done, I haven't gotten paid for, and that is the community work that I've done. And going back to 07, some of us might remember when Jefferson High School was on the chopping blocks, and a group of rabble-rousing parents and myself fought to keep the doors of Jeff open. And we didn't realize that we were at the beginning of the gentrification onslaught at the time. But we definitely remember when Mayor Potts was in office. And Jefferson High School was the only school in Portland that had closed campus lunch. So we started a Lunch Jones, where we would bring lunch into the students because, again, they've waited their whole life to have off-campus lunch, and it was closed campus because the new neighbors were scared of the black students coming out of the school during lunchtime. So through the Lunch Jones, we started to capture student voice. We elevated that voice. We created a short film, sent it to City Hall. We also sent it to the school board, And school board held session within the halls of Jefferson High School for a week, and we actually got a Spirit of Portland award for that effort. But beautiful long story shorter, they immediately reopened campus for lunch. At the time, PCC was also kind of posturing to take over that campus. We actually leaked the schematic of their sports arena onto the internet. So once people were aware that that was happening behind closed doors, then that raised a whole lot more heads, and other people came in and started swinging for Jeff as well. So helping to keep the school open, reclaiming the name of Martin Luther King Elementary. Some people don't know, 2010, unilateral decision was made to change the school from Dr. Martin Luther King to King, because things weren't done properly from the standpoint of from the federal requirements. So in order to gain, to continue to get the funding, they had to change the name of the school. So they changed it from Martin Luther King to King. Even though in 68, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, the students in that school was formerly Highland. The mm-hmm. students in the school mm-hmm. actually changed the name of the school, and they presented it to the school board and said, we want to change the name of our school. And Portland, some don't know, but Portland was actually the first school to bear the name of Martin Luther King Jr. in the nation. So so to reclaim that in 2019 was big. And to allow that to be a student-led effort, because there was actually an eighth grader who brought it to my attention at the time I was a PTA president, that then King reclaimed as Dr. Martin Luther King. And even I saw her, she works at Costco, I saw her, and she was like excited to remember that moment. And some have heard of EDPA 2 and know that there's a lawsuit against the city of Portland right now that the Emmanuel Displaced Persons Association is now fighting to at least get some of the proceeds of the legacy and land that was lost through the Emmanuel Hospital and mm-hmm. Interstate pushouts. So help to, again, elevate those voices and hand them off to attorneys who are now advocating for those families.
So I'm glad you brought up working with youth, because mm-hmm. that segues into question number four. Mm-hmm. And I read both y'all's campaign information, thanks to the assistant that we have here, our associate producer. Good job, good job, good job.
Nice.
So Sharon, in your campaign, you highlighted the importance of Portland's youth. I've read a lot of campaign literature from other candidates. I haven't seen it that much. Can you tell me why?
There are future and there are present. They have a right to have the same things that we did as far as growing up and being able to go out, wander the town as our campus. But what we had, and I don't see very often, are a lot of youth places to hang out, to play pool, we used to play pool and I can't think of what the games are, but all of these table games and different things.
Ping
and
pong.
Yeah, I was excellent at ping pong and shuffleboard and all those other. And so you had all these, but you also had dances that were in the middle of the afternoon. And you had places for us to go. Our school, there are a lot of activities and clubs that could happen, but they should happen at school. Kids don't have to transfer back and forth. You have more of an eye of what's going on. Volunteers can come in. One of the things I list on my website is that we need to start with a citywide volunteering that is from the city, where they put all the nonprofits on. And then they ask people, because I run into people from time to time, especially young men, who say, I want to volunteer or help, and I know I should. I feel it, and I could do this or that. But I'm afraid, because I'm not from here, or I don't know exactly how to get in. I don't want to say I want to help kids or the elderly, because I might come across as being weird. And there isn't anything that opens me in. Well, if the city had a First Start program where you come in, you give your fingerprint, just like you did when I was a realtor, then you can at least say, well, I did the first step. It doesn't mean that they aren't going to be a terrible person or something, but they did the first step. They're going to feel like they can go forward because they have something, and you're going to feel a little bit like, oh, hey, this person tried. They weren't afraid to step up and give their name and their fingerprint. But so back to the fact that so the children then can also not only need to start the clubs there at the schools so that more can participate, and they don't have to travel and you can have more clubs because you have the space. But I think we should be using our parks and or large buildings to have monthly events, weekly events, where they, once a child is above the age of 10 years old, they can figure out the event, what they want to do, who should be there, may move the tables around. This week it's art, that week it's poetry. Sometimes it's dancing, sometimes it's music. How would you feel to have your band being up on a stage and all the kids in your neighborhood being able to see it, and you're using real speakers and real this and that, and there's a stage there. And then so you have six bands at night. And moving it around, it doesn't really cost anything to set up a better future for them, and also getting them to used to being to downtown Portland. Downtown's not going to come back alive without the youth being there. And one other thing I would like to say is, although I'm not much for military, I was very surprised recently that a lot of people that want to go into the Army Reserve, about a third of them, once they actually apply and have that much nerve, are turned away. They're turned away usually for physical reasons, sometimes for emotional or mental, but usually for physical reasons. And I think we need to look out at our Air Force here that we have and do some kind of program for those who do want to take that step into the training. You get education, you get housing, you get a lifetime of career. It's easy for you to sometimes get jobs. And it's a 2 or 4 year experience that will affect you for the rest of your life.
Okay, I'm going to move over to Beauty. Beauty, you said there are two root causes for the problems that Portland is facing. What are those problems?
Yes, ma'am. a legacy of inhumanity, greed and elitism, and sort of unapologetic inequity that's like been hovering over the city since its inception, if we really go back to the inception of the state. Like, that's what Oregon was built on, which can easily be changed. It's just a matter of us as a collective having the will to make that shift. And this is the perfect opportunity to do that with a new form of government. One, separating out legislative and executive branches, bringing in literal teams of commissioners to work on behalf of the general public. Totalitarianism like does not work in this system, and I'm grateful for that. Another reason that I was inspired to put my hat into the quote unquote race, because again, to look at the prospect of being a part of a team that is building towards a better Portland. I'm very excited about that. And also, I want to say that I 1,000% agree with Sharon about breathing into our youth and creating pathways for them to also be involved with civic engagement. Because what we're building, we look at 4 years, and we look at 4 years out, the youth are the ones that are going to take the baton. Mm-hmm. So not only do we need to make sure that we're educating them on why, on the whys of this change that's taking place in our city government, but also setting them up, equipping them, inspiring them, and empowering them to step in next.
Okay. You're listening to, and thank you both for your answers. And I appreciate you both complimenting each other. That's very lovely, especially in this political climate.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Running on Air, production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Lanita Duke. Today we're speaking with two candidates for the mayor. We have Sharon Assat and Beauty Al-Salam. Please join our conversation by calling in your question to our air room, 503-231-8187. Or you can message us at the KBOO website, kboo.fm, kboo.fm. Now let's get back to our discussion. Sharon, question number six. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the qualities that a new Portland mayor in a different role than before will have to embody? And for those of you that don't know, the mayor no longer assigns bureaus. The mayor will hire an administrator to run the city, so to speak. That's a radical change. And we have commissioners now represented of each district. Like, I live in District 2, and I'll have a commissioner for District 2. But my brothers and sisters that live out in East County, they'll have a commissioner for them. Folks that live downtown will have a commissioner. And our brothers and sisters in the West Hills will also have representation.
Well, right. I think it is fabulous. I am actually hoping that they put district office out. I was hoping that the district offices would be out in the district so that citizens would go to the, I mean, that's where the people are, that's what's going on right there, and then we'd come to City Hall maybe once a week or at different times. I'm hoping that they will be able to do evening meetings and weekend meetings, and they're going to have to worry about being in a forum. A quorum, because of three of them being if they're in the same type of office. But I think they can set it up to have a very environmental justice type of open meeting environment, like having like board meetings or different working sessions that are open to the public to sit there. Maybe they'll inspire to have an ombudsman that'll take questions from the public or not, and they can actually hear the deliberation in those areas. So I see the mayor, since they aren't making a decision and they aren't the vote unless it's tie, that they can be more of a sounding board. People can come to them and say, I have this problem or that problem, or I'm thinking this way or that way, because they aren't constantly trying to sell you on it. And when you say to them, well, what do you think about this? Or I kind of heard that. Or they don't think that you're attacking them. They realize you're offering opinions and stuff because you're not somebody they're trying to slay. So I think that will be very helpful. As far as hiring a manager for the city, I think they need to be open-minded, inclusive, and extremely strong on business. We have plenty of people in government that know government and how to work it. Yes, they have to know how to work some government, but they're going to hire people that are with them that aren't. Our city has made a lot of decisions by what was the loudest voice in the room, without using management by objective, without actually taking facts into consideration, and to listening to the experts. The loudest person in the room is not necessarily always the expert. So I'm hoping that they will listen, invite everybody in, be able to be very inclusive, and then being able to say, okay, here's the facts, and we're going to set up a process. So management by objectives, what we want, what we don't want, how we'll get there, and a way to measure it as we go along, not after the process, if we're staying on it. And that is what I'm looking for most in somebody to manage the city, somebody that says, okay, this is how it's done.
Okay. Beauty, would you mind answering that question? What do you think are some of the qualities that a new Portland mayor in a different role than before will have to embody? And what are the qualities you look for in a city administrator?
I'm going to offer the answer on a broader base. I say as a mayor, as a city administrator, as all the deputy city administrators, as well as the commissioners, understanding that we are in two separate houses, but we're still one team, that collaboration is key for each and every one of us that choose to take a seat at the table. And also, as Sharon stated, active listening, it has to happen. And again, not just the loudest voice, not just the one who is most poised, not the one who has the most dollars backing their words, but we really, and again, this is the reason for this breakdown of government, or say buildup of government, where we have 12 different commissioners. Like, that is offering opportunity for a lot of different voices to make it to the table. So being really intentional about making sure that not only are we listening, but we're actually hearing what's being said by the constituents across the city. And as you also stated, Lenita, East Portland is still Portland. Like, yeah, people call Portland. It East County. It is Portland. So
Portland.
We need to reel East Portland back in.
They need to know
they are part of the city too. There's a lot of focus being put on downtown, which, yes, and, but these are all very important parts of Portland. There's not one part of Portland that's more important than another. And so the specific attributes, respect, humility, teachability, transparency, and accountability are definitely like the chief characteristics that I would hope we would all choose to bring to the table.
Which segues into my next question about charter. So charter changes here. We have a new form of government. What do you see as some of the opportunities and drawbacks in this new system? Now, you both touched on it, mm-hmm. but specifically, let me start with you, Sharon. What do you see as some of the opportunities and some of the drawbacks? You talked about having various voices being heard. And I really dig your idea of having meetings in the evening when people get home from work. You know, I shouldn't have to testify before city council or city hall during the day. I got to take off from work, mm-hmm. use my sick time or vacation time, if I have that. And sometimes you can't get off from work.
That is so very, very true. One of the things I've recommended is that once a month, they should have at least one night where you have city council at night. You know, if not every other week, but at least once a night a month, I would actually like to see city council, the council itself, go into the different districts, which is why I was hoping there would be district offices, and have a full council meeting at night where you don't have to pay for parking, you didn't have to take off from work, something I have done hundreds and hundreds of times.
What are the drawbacks of this new? What do you see as the drawbacks of this new system? I'm going to ask you the same
drawback
question.
That I see is one district being stronger than another, one part being perhaps having more, being stronger, but also having more already. I was kind of hoping that when they did the districts that went across the board and that had people that were in the neighborhoods that were financially challenged and those that historically and those that were not together in the same. And so instead of doing the way they did the districts, which were natural districts already. And the reason being is you put the same people in that district, they come in and they say, okay, this is what our district needs. And they put out a list. And when it comes from the west side, no offense, they're going to say, oh, and the East Side is going to say, well, we have all these things. And they're going to say, well, but, and then they're going to realize that they have to bring the people on the other side up to their state in the district before they can ask for more things for their district or a higher level. But if you're in a district that already has everything, you're going to be asking for more things. If you're in a district that doesn't have as much, you're going to be asking for a lot. And they're going to say, well, you already got all, no. Equaling it out by having people that are financially challenged and people that aren't financially challenged and the same thing, having the rungs of the ladder kind of knowing how to do it, or some of them saying, you guys really don't have band uniforms. Mm-hmm. You know, Roosevelt years ago did a parade and they did it was a great thing and they all came out in their instruments and they played fake instruments and they did the whole march, the entire parade. And they didn't have, they all dressed in a specific color. Anyways, it was because they didn't have enough band instruments for everybody, so they weren't going to play unless everybody could, mm-hmm. and they didn't have uniforms. The paper missed it, totally didn't understand it, and thought it was weird and kept saying that they were mimes. And, sorry.
Okay, we're going to move on to beauty. We are running out of time.
No.
Well, we got little time, but we want to make sure we get all the questions answered. Beauty, would you answer that question? What do you see some of the opportunities and drawbacks of this new system?
Well, I spoke to a lot of the opportunities. So I guess I'm speaking to one of the challenges, because again, I don't necessarily see it as an obstacle, because it too can become an opportunity. And I'm kind of going to segue off of what Sharon shared, because 1,000% there is a difference between equity and equality. So there is sort of a glaring difference between the way that the different districts are broken down. And to use East Portland as an example, mm-hmm. that East Portland has been overlooked. And we know why historically that group has been overlooked, because that also is disproportionately those who were gentrified, priced out of Inner North Northeast Portland. So now Inner North Northeast Portland looks different and has a different demographic than it did 10 and 20 years ago. And so that causes those in East Portland to feel even more disenfranchised, and even some of them like were not even looking at any of the candidates or they weren't feeling supported by the previous
charter, the way the city council was set up.
Yes, correct. It was previously set up.
Because it was at-large voting.
But I love seeing the activation now in East Portland, because they're like, for the first time, we have a voice now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm elated for us and them, because, again, that's not us and them. It's we.
It's how it works.
Right. Yeah. So the beautiful thing is we, for the first time as a city, get to be a we. And so, again, it's apparent, looks like an obstacle at first, but really it's a beautiful opportunity.
Which is a lovely way to we're going to take a quick break. Again, you're listening to Running on Air. We're going to play a music for about a minute. Stand by. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's their website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidates, interviews, and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions, and they also explain various ballot measures. So that's lwvpdx.org. Welcome back to Running on Air. Running on Air is a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Lanita Duke from Grassroot News. We're speaking with two candidates for mayor, Sharon Asset and Beauty Al-Salam. You can join the conversation by calling in your questions to the air room at 503-231-8187, or you can message us at our KBOO website, kboo.fm. Shouldn't it be .org or something, or just KBOO? No? Okay, that's what Althea says. That's cool. So let's get back to our discussions. So let me ask, start with you, Sharon. What are some of the things Portland is doing right?
Reevaluating itself, knowing that it needs to go forward and reboot. Saying honestly, hey, this isn't how we want it, and we're going to make changes. And the fact that the majority of the people want to make it compassionately, and as I say, a lot of the homeless is because of poor policies, housing policies we made. But people also bring up that other people came here. And here's the thing, we need to wear that as a badge of honor. And just like we have gone with Solve, or say Oregon litter and vandalism and recycling, the gas tax, all kinds of other things that we've brought to the nation. The Veterans Affairs, the reason people can buy homes, veterans, is because it came from ODVA. Oregon started that. And all the other things we've started. Well, we can start a new look at going back to having boarding houses and rooming houses. 40 to 60% of all Americans lived there before the 1960s. It's good for us socially, it's cheaper, it's less expensive. And so what do I think Portland's doing right? I think they're stopping and really realizing they need a reset. And everybody knows what we have is excellent and that we're going to bloom when we're finished.
Beauty, would you answer that question, please? What are we doing right in Portland?
Agreed. Reassessment, realignment, recalibration. Introspection, taking, again, I hope, I'm very optimistic that it's not a glance, but we're taking a real critical look at what just has not been working. And a lot of the things that we're putting dirt on it, it's still not working. And making a choice to, in some instances, make a 180, in other instances, literally restructure. Like, don't try to force that square peg into that round hole. Just recognize and understanding that a lot of the systems that are currently in place were built for specific purposes. They worked for the purposes for which they were created. They are dated. They need to be extricated, and we need to do something different, vastly different.
And that segues into our next question. What are among the most pressing issues you will tackle if you're mayor?
Well, of course, first is housing. And I think that you can do that immediately by setting up temporary places for people to camp. There is no need to keep moving people around all the time. They need showers, services, lockers. And there are plenty of parking lots that have electricity in them. It's not going to ruin, make the ground muddy for the campers. It's not going to ruin the ground. And immediately set that up. Next is a register for people that are paying too much or underhoused. And then city working on showing people how to do boarding houses and rooming houses for those who are interested in maximizing the housing that we have here. It's cheaper, it's less expensive, it's quicker, and goes online fast. New housing is most expensive, slowest, changes the neighborhood the most, has all kinds of problems. So, I'm sorry, what was the second?
No, just what are some of the most pressing
First is housing, and then we need to put trash cans back on our street corners like we had before, in the parks, go back to regular bathrooms, not these terrible ones that they're putting out there right now. I'm not sure if you've seen the metal ones. If you haven't tried to use them, I don't know anybody that wants to use them. The wind blows through them. They have venting on the top so somebody could look in. They have venting underneath so somebody can look in. When you're inside, the water sprays inside. They're cold. They only have water that tiny drips out of a thing, and then they have just a cleaning solution instead of real water. They're horrible. But anyways, so that, and then actually physically having people go downtown and enjoy cleaning it, washing it, painting it, and getting to know the people that are there in downtown, then choosing other parts of town that they would actually like to do a facelift on. Ask a bunch of realtors to sit and look at each different property, talk about it, its history, what's going on, and put it on YouTube as a city and say, hey, this is what we have. And do it all together, because the one way that we will go forward is everybody feels they have their hand in it. And the other thing is congestion. We have to realize that we have 12 bridges across Willamette. We only have 2 across the Columbia. That if we did 2 bridges in 2000, we would have been still in last place nationally for the size between us. We lose millions of dollars a year. North Portland is in the 2% worst air quality of the nation because of it. 197,000 vehicles a day, most of them 18-wheelers, go into Rivergate every day.
And I'm going to summarize what you're going to say, what you talked about in some of your campaign literature. You want to have another bridge, right? Like,
yes.
I-5. Just going into Washington?
Thirdbridgenow.org actually connects to I-5 in Washington, goes across at Janssen Beach at the Port of Vancouver, and then goes down at an angle like 405 does into Swanonan, attaches to I-84, realigns I-84, and then one leg of it goes over to Highway 30. It has been around since 2003 and was in the Columbia River Crossing Project as Alternative River Crossing 14 and was removed by staff.
Beauty, would you answer that question? What are among the most pressing issues you will tackle if you're mayor?
Again, it's not a me, it's a we, because I recognize as mayor, I'm a part of a team. So I say houselessness, but beyond houselessness is hopelessness. Because again, sometimes we pay a lot of attention to the rotten fruit and the rotten leaves, but we're not really looking at the root. And what I fully recognize is we are a city in pain. We need to heal. And so if we, not say if, when we choose to focus, like laser-like focus, on the healing of our citizens, then a lot of the other outerlying issues will absolutely resolve themselves. When we have people who are currently in houseless situations who are looking at themselves from a different vantage point, where there's self-love, where maybe there's not, but currently that also helps with the addiction, drug-affected situation, because we know self-medication is the reason that a lot of our friends and family are out there trying to find ways to pacify their pain. And again, so if I had to say one thing that we need to focus on as a city is actively addressing unaddressed trauma, so healing.
Moving on, talking about unaddressed trauma, the mayor is responsible for the police bureau.
Mm-hmm.
How can you make the police responsive to the community while addressing the core reason for crime?
Well, first off, we really need to focus on having the police in our community need to not only come from our community, be hired from Portland. And by doing that, we're going to have to work on the fact that some of the people are going to have records that are going to have to be looked at. They're going to have to be expunged. They're going to help with the education to bring them up to be the type of officer we need to be. But that person is going to know. They're going to be able to say, hey, I was there. I understand it. They're going to see what's happening. They will also bring compassion to other law officers by seeing, oh, this guy had all these problems, and yet he's this great person now. Maybe this person who I'm dealing with will also turn into a great person, like this police officer who is next to me, who has gone through a lot and is trained here. So we are going to have some people in the city that are going to have problems becoming officers, and we need to work on what it takes to bring them up to snuff and not expect them to come in already baked. The next thing is we have to have real community policing, and that is having a whole day or a weekend where police officers interact like at a school or a gymnasium, where they talk to each other, they question each other, they play games, maybe they paint faces and so forth and so on, and you talk to them about the problems you have, what's going on in your community, what's going on in your neighborhood, and you have those regularly, like quarterly, in different parts of town. That way you start to know the police officer, that they have children, they know who you are, you become familiar with things, and you can ask them in a situation where you're not in an extreme situation, so how should I handle this, or what would you do with that, or teach a little bit of defense class. And by doing this regularly, you have each other's back. The police department has to have its cameras. It has to, when somebody is breaking the law, you got to find out, why are they breaking the law? Is it because they don't understand, or that they're repeat? If they're their repeat, pick them up. If they don't understand, deal with them where they're at.
Beauty, answer the question. The mayor is responsible for the police bureau. How can you make the police responsive to the community while addressing the core reason for crime?
So for me, it's not making, it's empowerment, but I want to offer a little bit of context. Beauty Asalam is who I stand before you now as. I was born Shamika Newman. So when I graduated from Benson High School alum, they would know me as Shamika Newman. Back in 2009, I actually was arrested on a falsely arrested, maliciously prosecuted, and physically abused by the police. And I actually ended up fighting the case, won the case, and on the other side of that, I actually entered the ranks of going through the process of becoming a police officer. So again, turning pain into passion. When I was going through that process, there were several things that I realized. And the kind of culminating point is that the way that the process to become a police officer was created was not created with everyone in mind. It is heartening to know that some of those things are starting to change. If you even look at the demographic makeup of the Portland police officers that they are now starting to hire, it's looking different than it had in the previous 30 years. And something that a lot of people aren't aware of or may not be paying attention to is a lot of people blame COVID. A lot of people blamed the outbreak of methamphetamine use in downtown as the reason why less police officers want to be police officers. But really, it's attrition. Because if you're looking at the war on crime, war on drugs, police officers span 25 to 30 years for their careers. So we're looking at a drove of police officers that are now hitting retirement age. And my understanding is come November, there's like maybe 200 or so that are up for retirement. So I say, let them retire. Yes, please.
Well,
let them retire.
Sharon says that they should extend the retirement age.
What I'm saying is two things. One is that once a police officer gets older and they're more trained and more trained, they're less reactive. They're a little more community oriented. They've seen a few things. You don't pull their string as much. And that of all the people, firefighters and responders, if they're able to make it to that age and still able to do the job, that is who I want. I want them to be able to double dip. I want them to start out at the pay of like they would if they were starting new. They aren't going to need benefits, so it's cheaper. They're already trained. Let them keep their benefits. They'll understand how the officer's going through things and have it stay there. Now, having said that, I believe that police officers should independently each carry their own insurance, similar to the way that an engineer or a doctor does when they could kill somebody from a big building or the other. So pay their base insurance, and as long as they're good, that's great. If they start doing anything bad, then that insurance goes up and they pay for it. They will either leave because they start paying too much, or they will get better. And it will not bother other police officers or people to turn them in, because it's not taking money from the citizens when they're bad and have to pay something. It's not taking from the citizen the police pension when they're bad. It's taking from their individual responsibility, so they'll turn them in easier. Can't go to another bureau.
Now, I'd kind of disagree with you on that.
An insurance?
I had a solid yes.
Well, I disagree that when police officers have been there a long time, they're more ingrained in their racism and sexism and pre-existing prejudices.
Yeah.
That's what folks of color, like, they would look at someone's last name and they may have arrested that person in the past, and they'll criticize the whole family, and they'll, you know. So I guess I have a different interpretation for that. You wanted to say something?
I was just going to say yes and. Like, I can see where Sharon is coming from and why she might have that perspective. And at the same time, I would have to say absolutely, based on my own personal lived experience, for myself and for my peers, that has been a very different situation, where again, I even know people who are on the police force, and they have admitted that even things as simple as the population of police officers who work in Portland but don't live in Portland, like they live in Vancouver, so like they don't have skin in the game. So it's easy for you to be very dismissive to a group of people who you don't connect with, you don't live around, and so you're not accountable to them. So again, that would be a part of that revamp. We'd be very intentional about making sure that officers are from the neighborhood that they patrol. So they have skin in the game. Bring back officer friendly. That's another thing I want to throw out. I remember back in the 80s, back in Portland, we had officer friendly. Mm-hmm. I was a little black girl, only one of three black children in the school. Mm-hmm. And officer friendly inspired me to think I wanted to be a police officer because I saw the humanity in that mm-hmm. officer by mm-hmm. coming into the school and just being a human being.
That's what I'm saying about the weekend thing and spending time with each other and learning how to do women's... or not necessarily just women, but defense and stuff. I understand that you can worry about some people who are ingrained in, who are not good, but for some, but a large majority, I'd say more than half do try and are good. Yes. As far as...
And I guess we'll find out now that they have cameras. Right. We'll find out if the majority are
not.
I would want that.
Being a white woman, I have experienced problems before. I've had problems where I've been in trouble and been told I was uppity or I didn't look at them quite right or yelled at. I've actually had a gun pointed at me one time when I was stopping them from beating a person. I get it. When you have the majority of the people saying that they don't call the police when there's a problem because they think the police are the problem right. when they get there, I get it.
Okay, and with that, let me ask you a question I know both of you would love to answer. Where can folks find out more about you and your campaign? Let's start with Sharon. They're going to move over to Beauty.
Please look at electnasset.com. And our campaign headquarters is on Lombard and Haven Street in North Portland. Please look at the website. It's got information on how to contact us. We would really love to hear from you. But the number one thing that would be the most important is for you to contact the radio stations and the civic organizations and ask them to have the candidates that are here and other candidates be heard. They have used the small donor program to exclude anybody that didn't have it was excluded instead of including it. And you've got voices out there. You want to hear more from us, I'm sure.
Beauty?
Yes, I am one who has abstained from taking money from the general public. Peace, love, beauty for Portland. And that's peace, regular spelling, PACE, love, LOVE, beauty, BE, capital UTEE, the number 4, Portland@gmail.com. Hit me directly because this peace, love, and beauty for Portland is a people power movement. We need all boots on the ground, all hands on deck. This is not about me. This is about we. So let's do this.
And we have a question from the audience. We wanted a follow up about the police accountability process that's been going on. Do you want to comment on that?
I think it's important to have a citizen board, and I think it's important to have a police accountability. I also think it's important for the police officers to evaluate the situations and the other officers on a monthly basis. Say, this month did I have any time where I thought I needed more training or less training or more information or more communication? Or maybe the officers I was with, maybe I noticed that this guy over here wasn't trained this way or that way. And I think once a month that they just say, okay, you guys write it out, send it in anonymously. Did you have any experiences where you think you needed more or less training? And if so, identify who and go forward with it. So common, so often that it is not a big deal. It's when it happens so rarely that it becomes a big deal. If it's like, it's time to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I have to be 100%. Accountability would be the top tier of my focal point as far as the Portland police
are. I guess the question has to do with the Citizen Review Board with the police? Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Police accountability? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I have a yes and only because I was involved in some of that process. And so it still is a system, and systems aren't bad in and of themselves. But we also have to look at the outcome. What are we trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. And are we using the right tool to achieve our goal. And again, from my perspective, it's a yes and, because an ounce of prevention is worth way more than a pound of intervention. So
it's good that they're looking at it and trying to that they know they need to look at it, that they're trying to make changes, and they know they can do better.
Right. And I'm just saying, if we do a better job on the intake process, then we don't have to do so much work on the back end on checks and balances.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see all these, what's going on with all these police cameras. And with that being said,
I agree. Years ago, I was saying that instead of cameras, that they should have recording, because they can do that cheap and easy at that time, and the camera wouldn't be there, and they wouldn't be thinking about it as much, and you would be able to get a lot of issues. We had a problem with a lot of cussing, loud cussing, and I remember them saying,
no more cussing, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Beauty Al-Salam and Sharon Nassett. They're both running for Portland mayor. Please consider them. They've given you information how you can follow up with them. You know, you can find all episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Our engineers are Althea Billings and Morgan, and our producer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric. Tune into the next episode of Running on Air. It will be on Monday, October 14th at 7 p.m. with the candidates from District 1. I've been your host, Lanita Duke from Grassroots News Northwest. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.